If it's something you can't control, be comfortable letting it go. What's the last step in grieving? Letting go. Okay. You know, this was a decision, you know, we're moving to a new administration software. It's a decision made at the corporate level, three levels up. You had no voice in it. It's going to happen in 4 months.
Hey, gang, how are you? Welcome back, by the way. Bill Sheridan here. This is Future Proof. Glad you're here. Glad to be here. You know, I think it's cool that we get to spend a little bit of time together each week, right? You know, I like my job in general, but this is one of my favorite things that I get to do each week. Catching up, spending a little bit of time talking with all you fine folks, sharing some stuff I've learned, some conversations I've had with some really smart people. It's just fun. I enjoy it. Hope you do too. Hey, let's start with this, shall we? This week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. I was thinking about this recently. If there's one word that describes the past year with a fair amount of accuracy, I'd say it would have to be change, right? That stuff just kind of tends to happen in a pandemic, I guess. I haven't been through any other pandemic, so, you know, I'm not really sure how your average pandemic works, really. But this one has been all about change. We've been through lockdowns and quarantines and work from home and homeschooling. We've been through masks and vaccines and no concerts, no restaurants, no parties, no family or friends. And that's all if you're lucky, right? I mean, if you're not, you might be dealing with, you know, being out of work or being sick or watching those you love deal with being sick. You might be dealing, God forbid, with loss and grief. The families of 500,000 Americans are dealing with all of that right now, and our hearts go out to them. So it's been a year of unprecedented change in a lot of ways. And dealing, you know, with change, you know, that type of change, it impacts each of us in a lot of ways, a lot of very personal ways. And we're all dealing with it in different ways. And, you know, since this is a business podcast, a business-y podcast, so to speak, we're sort of a business podcast, right? A lot of the stuff that we talk about here is done in the context of business or work. So let's talk about change today in that sort of context as an example. So here's an example, right? The organization that I work for just lost its longtime president and CEO. He had been with us for 24 years. That's a long time. And he left to take another job. And a few of our colleagues in the office left with him. And that's a big change, right? For everybody. And everybody deals with it in a different way, right? And those of us who are tasked with leading our organizations through these types of changes, we have to come to grips with one basic truth, and that's this. All change is personal. And all too often, we don't treat it that way, right? This is from an article with that exact title. The name of the article is All Change is Personal. It's written by Brian Gorman, appeared in the, or rather on the Change Management Review website. And here's what Brian writes. He says, quote, "It doesn't matter whether the change begins at the organizational or even the societal level. It doesn't matter whether the catalyst is a Supreme Court ruling, a merger, or a decision to make a job or career change. For those affected by any change, that change is personal. And the more it disrupts the current state of things, the more personal the change is. Unfortunately, many of our modalities for approaching change lose sight of this fundamental truth," end quote. And there are two sides to how we approach change. One of those is from those of us who are impacted most directly by the change. And for us, the solution really kind of comes down to two key parts, at least according to workplace psychologist Dr. Pete Stebbins. He wrote an article recently, and he says this. He says, we've got two jobs when it comes to dealing with change. He says, quote, to survive and thrive in a fast-changing world of work, we need to become self-experts at two very important psychological tasks. Number one, letting go of the past effectively. In other words, managing the emotions of grief and loss rather than bottle up or avoid or deny the emotional impact change is having on us. And number two, learning new skills quickly, having the self-awareness and openness to learn new skills and insight to understand the learning techniques that suit us best. End quote. And then the other side of the change equation is made by those of us who are leading others through the change, right? And we've got a job to do as well. Brian Cobb, he wrote an article for i6sigma.com called Understanding the Impacts of Change. And he says leaders have to address the why behind the change and anticipate their team's concerns and then communicate almost to the point of over-communicating and encourage feedback, right? Giving people a mechanism to express their thoughts and concerns. So I guess the point is no one escapes, right? Change impacts everybody in an organization, and we all react to it in different ways. And my guest this week is going to help us explore how change impacts us and what we can do about it. He is Carl Ulrichs. Carl is a best-selling author. He's an acclaimed national speaker and thought leader who works across all industries, really, and has a ton of experience in human resources and operations and senior-level problem solving. He's also a friend, also a not-so-amateur photographer, right? He's really good. And we talk a little bit about that, too. But mostly, we're going to talk about today the personal impact of change, the different types of change, the different ways in which we process it, the four stages that we all go through when we're dealing with change. And really, the most important thing that we should all be focusing on as we work our way through any sort of change. So great stuff this week, really important stuff, great insights and advice I think that we all can use these days especially. Here is my conversation with Carl Ulrichs. All right, so I'm curious where the photography hobby came from. How did you get started with all that?
It was interesting. Well, thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. I had a homeroom teacher who was president of the junior high photography club, and he was cool. And he said, Monday nights, we're in the darkroom. And that was cool. I was a nerd. Some would say I still am. And high school can be brutal for people who aren't part of something.
Right.
Yeah. And I was not athletic. I was not artistic. I was, there's a whole list of things I was not. But by having the role of photographer, I could then join every group and go take pictures of sports go take pictures of theater and so it gave me a role. And that was point number one. Point number two, and those of our listeners who have an iPhone or an Android, you have a good camera in your pocket or purse all the time. Mm-hmm. And by being more aware of the world, you become more a part of the world. And so simply by walking around looking for pictures and at family gatherings looking for pictures, you become more a part of it. At least you're more aware of it.
That's a really good point. I hadn't really stopped to think of it that way, but
yeah.
But that's a really good point. In a way that a lot of people are not part of the world nowadays. You know, we're all walking around looking at these screens and not paying attention to what's going on around us. And photography kind of draws us back into that. That's really
it good. Does. It's capturing moments, and I will assure you that my grandbabies are well documented. I checked the folder the other day. They've been in my life 12 years. There are more than 100,000 images in the family folder.
So you can actually find your way around a dark room then?
Yeah, wet chemistry, and I still do it.
Really? Yeah.
I shoot film occasionally. It's kind of like a stick shift transmission in a car. I can do that. And so occasionally I do.
That's cool. That's how I got started, actually. I was a journalist back in my previous life, years and years and years ago. And
I didn't know that.
Worked for a very small town newspaper in which the reporters were their own photographers, right? So we carried cameras around to anything we went to and took photos and had to learn how to develop our own film too. So I can still remember getting in there and like with the lights out and getting the film out of the camera and getting it ready to go in the camera. It was an education. So that was kind of cool.
Well, that's cool.
So change. What, I mean, I'm curious, Carl, what kind of impact has all this change had on you over the past year or so?
Well, I have learned that there's a human nature condition here that as we get older, we like patterns better. As we get older, we like changing patterns less. Mm-hmm. I think that's why marketing people really try to get their hooks into your buying habits before puberty.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you ask an adult to change their laundry soap. It's not going to happen.
Right.
But that said, we as human beings have succeeded because we can adapt and we can work in teams and we can fit the situation better than our predators would be out in the animal kingdom. You want proof of this? Go watch Naked and Afraid, any episode.
We should define our terms, but just on the off chance that there are people listening who don't know what this is.
Oh, that's
fair. What Naked and Afraid is.
Yeah. It's a TV show. I don't know what channel it's on, but the title exposes the premise. You know, you're dropped off literally naked with maybe only one or two objects, a fire starter and a knife is common. And the two people, a man and a woman, are then tasked with surviving in the wilderness for 3 weeks. And then the story begins. If you watch it, you realize that because one of the two can leaving the other person alone. Mm-hmm. Two people anywhere in the world working together can survive. They can be at the top of the food chain. Mm-hmm. One person, same situation, they're dinner. You know, they're the predators will eventually get them.
Yeah.
And so we are not the fastest. We don't have the biggest teeth. We don't have the strongest claws. We have our brains. Mm-hmm. And we have our ability to adapt to the situation we are faced with. You know, we can make tools. And that ability to change really sets us apart.
Yeah, that reminds me of a quote I came across just recently, and I forget who said it, but it was a snowy day and it got me thinking about snow related quotes, and I came across it. It was something along the lines of how snowflakes are one of the most fragile things that you can find in nature, but just look what they can do when they stick together, right?
Oh, yeah, it's probably they'll claim it's either Einstein, Abraham Lincoln, or Mark Twain.
Yeah, one of those. Yeah,
yeah, and it's none of those, but still.
So I mean, when change hits us, like serious change, what we've all been going through this past year, huge shifts in personal, professional lives, whatever the case may be, what can we expect personally when that type of shift happens? What kind of personal impacts are we going to experience?
Well, there's two things I want to talk about. One is that it isn't just one change, that the changes layer upon us every day. Second, you know, we're in finance and accounting. We know what a distribution curve is. Everybody's response can be mapped along on a distribution curve from the very toe end on the anti-change side of, I'm not changing anything. to the other toe end where I can completely adapt to whatever change you're announcing in 15 minutes.
Okay.
I expected to see a lot of generational influence on this. I'm not seeing it. I mean, at any age, I'm seeing humans who are change averse, and I'm seeing humans who are adaptable. And I don't see courses on managing change taught in formal education. I see that if you don't handle change well, it can be such a stressor that the list is not good and it's long, that you will have more health problems. You will have a shorter life because of internalizing all the stress that you're trying to push against. And someone who goes with the flow and accepts a change or adapts to it more quickly lives a longer, healthier life and can manifest a quote unquote happier career.
Can you predict who's going to deal with change better than others by talking to them? Or is it possible that we can separate it from one person to another and say that one's going to be okay, this one's going to struggle?
Not in one conversation with adults, but the reason is, if somebody has, let's put people in two buckets, extroverts and introverts. Extroverts tell you what they're thinking. Introverts internally process and give you the summary. Introverts, for all the power they have of listening and being really focused, introverts don't share their true feelings with people they don't know very well. So you're going to get false readings on introverts if you're just doing a quick conversation.
Yeah.
I will, from a half humorous standpoint, I've developed a way to predict at age 4 or 5 how a child is going to mature into someone who is change averse or adaptable.
Really? How's that?
Take them to the county fair or the midway of a carnival. If they are not your children, get their parents' permission. Put them on a kiddie ride. And kiddie rides, in general, have two attributes. They go in a circle, it's like a motorcycle or a truck or a car or a plane or something. And at each station, there is some steering device that is bogus. It does not work. Right. And there is some distraction device, a bell, a light, a buzzer. So they have a control they can do something with.
Yep. Okay.
Most kids pretty quickly figure out that the steering wheel doesn't work, but the buzzer does. And they have a great time on the ride, ringing the buzzer and waving at mom and dad.
Yep.
The ones that you worry about are the kids that are miserable on the ride because they're trying to get this thing to turn the other way. And they spend the whole ride fighting something that does not work.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I think part of every finance and accounting job interview should have a kiddie ride.
How do we go about managing this stuff? I mean, are there steps involved here? Is it like a
there's
a grieving process? Or I mean, how does
thank you. Actually, yes, there is a process. And there is, but before we get to the process, there's this awareness thing I want you to be aware of that everybody needs to understand. This is human nature. This all comes back to brains.
Okay.
That the brain resets and refreshes when you sleep. And that every sleep-wake cycle has a certain amount, a certain capacity to adapt to changes while you're awake.
Okay.
And once you have spent that capacity to change. Imagine you wake up and there's a pocket full of change sitting on your dresser. And each time you have to adapt and change that day, you have to take some of that change. You're paying money for that change.
Yep.
When you run out of tokens, you're done changing for the day until you sleep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Reflect on it. I mean, there's days where you're done and it's noon. Go home or find something that's not threatening, that doesn't take a lot of mental process. You know, a good time to do your expense report.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is not a good time for you to have a lot of client interaction.
I've heard that going back to children again, I've heard that kind of phenomenon described in terms of kids as well, and why kids will, especially very young kids, by the end of the day, man, they hit that hour where they are just, they hit a wall and you can't bring them back. And it's for that very reason. Humans by nature have a finite amount of self-control or willpower, know, to control what's going on around them. And they use it up over the course of the day. And at a certain point,
here's the lesson in that. If, you know, clearly there's a lesson for us individually. If you are a manager of people, mm-hmm. you've got people arriving at the office who may have already used up all of their change.
Right.
They've had a flat tire. They got delayed in traffic. They had a family situation. They had a personal situation. I'm out of shampoo. Each one slices away a little bit. So let's say you have a piece of paper in your hand that you have. This is important. This is high value stuff for the department, for the company, for the firm. Step one, check in with the person you're about to have this discussion with and confirm that they are present. Mm-hmm. Confirm that they have some capacity. Explain briefly, how would this sound? Explain briefly what you're about to do. I have a new set of federal guidelines on technical corrections, topic 606, revenue from contracts with customers. This is important. This is a new accounting regulation rule that's coming in. And we have to decide how it's going to fit into our system. It's going to take 5 to 10 minutes, but it's really important that we get this right.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the key question. Is now a good time to talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you on a deadline? Or do you have the capacity to really focus on this for a minute? Nope. You know, I know we've had it scheduled as a 3:30. It's middle of the afternoon. Is now a good time? I mean, how would your world be, Bill, if every phone call coming in started with the question, are you on deadline?
Right. Oh, my gosh. How refreshing would that be? I mean, it's like every conversation you have, and I'm guilty of it too, you know?
Yes, you are. And that's why I brought it up.
Right. Whatever I'm talking to you about is the most important thing. Right. And I think we all do that.
It's who's really good at spotting when not to bring things up?
Mm-hmm.
Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, wanting that extra ice cream, but not right now. Mom's cranky.
Not a good time.
Yeah. Not a good time. Or mom's in a great mood. Hey, can I get a pony?
Yep.
Right. Okay. So point number one, it isn't just one change. They layer and it hits our capacity for the day. This is brain chemistry. When people hit what I have called the future threshold, where they've reached their capacity for dealing with the future. I remember computers back when you had a screensaver. I laugh and say, there's screensavers on. You know, the human screensavers clicked in and they're just sitting there with the 10,000 foot stare watching. Ah, it's the fish. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You see a lot of that now especially like in this remote world on Zoom meetings. And there's a lot of that kind of staring going on.
Second. Okay. So that's point number one. There's a finite amount. And the takeaway for individuals is be aware that they need to get a good night's sleep and that they are human for feeling that they're overwhelmed and that's they should take care of themselves, maintain balance, back away. Second point, if you're supervising, know your people. Those are the three rules. That there will be, know where people are on the distribution curve of being able to adapt. that there's people who will adapt and there's people who never will.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved our back office administration system from a command line prompt system to a mouse-based graphic interface. And we lost three people who were high quality, solid people, but they were not going to learn one of those, not going to do it.
Not ready for that type of change.
Yeah. Well, and in retrospect, we failed in not preparing them for the change by taking it in little steps. When Windows was first released, it came embedded with Solitaire as a game.
Right.
The purpose of the game was not to waste time. The purpose of the game was to get you used to clicking and dragging.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a really good point. I never really stopped to think about that.
That's why I'm here, just to make you think, Bill.
Built in kind of change management there.
Now, okay, so I made that point. The other point I wanted to make was, okay, great, we've got this ability to change. You know, we've got this awareness of that there's a finite limit. You had said, is there a cycle? Mm-hmm. There is.
Okay.
This is a standard cycle, very similar to grieving. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kubler-Ross has like 12 steps in the grieving process. I go with 4.
Okay.
But let's make it a real situation, but you come into work on Monday morning and they have changed all of the printers and moved them and changed the logins on the printers and given you a sheet of paper. They did not ask your permission. This is an imposed change.
Right.
And the printer that was right outside your office door is now down the hall. Okay. And it's a different kind of printer and you have to do different things. Step number one, denial. This can't be happening.
Right.
I'm going to get my printer back, aren't I? Stage number two, resistance, or sometimes I call it trash talking. This is stupid.
Right.
I'm not going to send it. I'm going to find a way to get the codes to send it to a closer printer, and I'm not going to learn these new codes. I'm going to stick with my old codes. I'm going to resist. I'm going to find a way to get a printer into my office clandestinely. I'll put it under my desk. No one will notice.
Mm-hmm.
Exploration. Well, these new printers are kind of nice. I mean, look at the print quality. It's fast and you can queue jobs up. Okay. And then finally, exploration of the new world. Oh my gosh, this thing binds. It does stapling better than the old ones. Hey, look at this. I love these printers.
Uh-huh.
Real world. I mean, you go through it when you come in, you finally emerge from quarantine and go to the grocery store and they have moved everything.
Yes.
Aisle 6 was condiments. I want aisle 6 to be condiments. You know, this is imposed changes that we did not choose.
And that just kind of turns everything on their heads for a period of time. I mean, where do we start in terms of processing these changes? You know, come in Monday morning and you've got all these changes and you're in that denial phase. I mean, what kind of steps do we take in order
if you as a supervisor know that the change is coming, let people know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this morning I was out driving and there were some guys with orange barrels who were puzzled at why they should have put anything other than like 3 orange barrels out at the point of impact, where maybe moving them further ahead and giving us a little warning to smoosh in. When you know there's a major change coming, forewarned really does help people adapt, does help people process some of the denial, some of the resistance before it becomes out of control entrenchment against the new system, the new idea, the new whatever. You can get people involved in the decision. We're going to make a change here. Would you rather have we are going to move to the other wing.
Right.
We're going to do it. Let's get everybody involved in how the floor plan should look, as opposed to we're moving, here's your desk, you got to sit. Choice has a lot to do with people's perception of the changes. If it's just a single item handed to them, here's the new packaging, love it or leave it, as opposed to you got a couple options. People have become very comfortable with choices. You go online to order some sneakers and you've got choices. People don't want to be told this or nothing.
Right.
Now, that said, I don't want a bunch of anarchy. I don't want a decision to be slowed way down because we're having endless focus groups and too much involvement. Anybody who has teenagers and tries to get them involved in decision-making knows what that's like. But just some warning helps.
Yeah, some involvement helps. It sounds like, you know, those few words of warning, hey, this is coming, can speed along the process, right?
It helps people get through denial before,
right?
And helps them get, you know, if they're involved in it a little more, the resistance is shorter. Yeah.
Is there a role to play for say you're on a team, you're working with a number of other people and not necessarily leading them, but you're noticing that others are struggling with this, where you're not necessarily, is there something that we can do for others to kind of smooth that path a little bit?
Listen, just listening, having workers that care to listen can really help get people through the resistance stage, because it's fashionable to be cynical. It's fashionable to dislike. You know, so if you have a plan and you don't second guess the organization's commitment to why we're doing this, and you're not pushing blame up and pointing to the boss's boss, it's their idea. But then also don't judge or blame your coworkers for where they are in the process. Every human has a different spot on that distribution curve. And, you know, you don't have to have all the answers, but if you listen and are empathetic, you know, you can still be firm that we're not going back to the way it was, but we can make this better if we adapt to it. I mean, just imagine that you have been planning a trip to Italy for 2 years and you are excited. You've got all the guidebooks, you got the maps out, you know where you're going to go, what you're going to do. You're excited about that. Mm-hmm. And you get off the airplane and you're in the Netherlands.
That's a big shock.
That's a big shock. You're not in Italy. Are you mature enough to say, okay, let's do the Netherlands? Or are you miserable and going to fly home because it wasn't Italy?
Right.
And I know people who would fly. I have been in a family event where they went to the wrong entrance and went to a wrong amusement park. And the kids were fine. The adults had a meltdown.
The day is ruined, event. Oh, I've been with adults who have ruined a completely good, very nice sit down dinner.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, they ordered medium rare and got medium, you know. And yeah.
Now actually food is very personal.
Well, that's true.
I'll give people that, but we just have to understand our core. Here's a key point. Core personality types make a big difference. You had asked earlier, how can we predict? Mm-hmm. When people are under stress, they become more of what they are. Somebody who's already conscientious becomes compulsive. Somebody who's confident becomes pushy. Somebody who's a risk taker becomes rebellious. Somebody who's sensitive is crying in the bathroom. Somebody who's private, they're gone. You know, they isolate. My personal favorite, somebody who is eccentric, just becomes totally bizarre. So my point is, as you are working with others, the extroverts are going to extrovert too much and the introverts are going to introvert too much, because when you're under stress, you become more of what you are.
Sounds like there's a lot of emotional intelligence that mm-hmm. can be beneficial here, both from the standpoint of knowing ourselves,
yep. right,
and understanding others.
Let me give you something that you can really do as a human to do a better job of this. Mm-hmm. You see athletes limbering up before they exert. You see people stretching before yoga. Maintain behavioral flexibility at times when it's not a crisis. Here's how you do it. Everybody can reflect in their life that there are some patterns in their behaviors. Every day, I have a morning ritual of let the cats out, pet each cat, get the coffee machine turned on. You know, there's a nursery rhyme of a morning routine. Change the routine because you can. Do it on days when you have a little extra time. If the routine is you always, let's go back to the grocery store. You go to the grocery store, you always get a cart, bang a left, produce first, this, ice cream last, fine. Give yourself a challenge. Next time you go to the grocery store, shop backwards. Okay, leave the ice cream for last. I'm not getting those that email.
Right.
It's a whole different store. If you start in a different aisle than your habit is, it will take you more time. You will be disoriented at times, and you will find food products you did not know existed. You will actually have a discovery moment. I will force myself to drive different routes on normal commutes. You know, what's over here? Wow. Never knew that building was an empty field last time.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of goes back to our conversation about photography earlier. It brings you more in touch with the world around you.
Yep. Also, by the way, it gives you power in your family if you aren't predictable.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you power as a manager and supervisor and leader if you reveal more depth to yourself and that you're trying something new and you're modeling adaptable behaviors by the very fact that you're reading a new corporate fad book. That's interesting, you know, that you came in on a weekend and moved your desk around. That's interesting. You know, you're forcing yourself on your environment. You're not passive to your environment. You've changed things. I mean, I'm holding up my cell phone. It's jewelry. Mm-hmm. People judge you on whether you've kept up. Okay, I try to keep up because I'm 65. So therefore, I have to make sure that the impression of me is that I'm not stuck in my ways.
Mm-hmm.
The impression of me is that I'm keeping up with modern changes and I'm not railing against them.
Right, right. So if you had to nail it down to like one thing, most important tool or resource or mindset or whatever it might be that we could lean on when find ourselves encountered with change like this. I mean,
I know what it is.
What would it be?
It's picking your fights.
Mm-hmm.
You can take everything in your world and put it in one of two buckets. Can you control it or can't you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bill, can you control the Dow Jones Industrial Average?
Me personally, no.
Right. That's the correct answer. Can you control your driving?
Yes.
Can you control whether you learn how to concatenate two columns in an Excel spreadsheet?
I can control that. Yes.
Okay, great. Can you control your sister-in-law?
No.
Right. Never could. Okay. Pick your fights.
Yep.
Which bucket should we work on? And which bucket should we let go?
Right. Probably focus on the stuff that we can control.
Thank you. And that's the big aha point. Here's healthy. Things that you can control, take action. Work on them. Here's the tough one, especially for people in accounting and finance who are really involved in controlling things. If it's something you can't control, be comfortable letting it go. What's the last step in grieving? Letting go. Okay. You know, this was a decision, you know, we're moving to a new administration software. It's a decision made at the corporate level, three levels up. You had no voice in it. It's going to happen in 4 months. Okay.
Yep.
Let it go. Let's go. Let's learn it. You know, we didn't choose Salesforce, but we're going to work with it. Okay. Let's go. What's unhealthy is when we do the opposite of either of those things. First off, the idea that it's something you can't control, but you try, that's an ulcer. That's wheel spinning.
Yeah.
And that's burning off a lot of energy that will throw you out of balance. And then even worse is where you could control it. You can control it. You could, but you choose not to, because it is more emotionally satisfying to play the victim.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, oh, pity me. It's not my fault. This is all being done to me. Yeah. Not a good look. And it can quickly be a career-ending move.
Well, you, and you mentioned the word healthy too. I mean, it just kind of struck me that there's a, there's an element of wellness involved.
Oh, huge.
In all of this as well. I mean,
huge. Ulcers, stress-related heart conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Stress can trigger diabetes. Also, it's interesting, if you are obsessing about things, you're overthinking things that you can't control in your brain is then internally focused and you're not paying attention. Peripheral vision isn't there. You're not paying attention to the world around you.
Yeah.
And you don't subconsciously notice things that if you had more balance, if you had more brain power, you know, you would notice things and just have that peripheral vision. People who are more relaxed are more present. And by being present, all sorts of good things happen.
Oh, yeah.
This is why at my office, we have, we're finally coming back online. But every quarter, we have in-office massage chair therapy come in. And everybody can have a half an hour in the massage chair.
Uh-huh.
It helps.
Oh, yeah.
It also helps to eat healthier. It helps to sleep more. It helps to get the television out of your bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
These are all steps that get at managing change better.
That's really interesting. So, last word here, Carl. I mean, what do you want us walking away with from this conversation?
It's human nature to resist change, but it's human nature to adapt. Which do you pick? You know, it's, you have a choice.
Yep.
And you need to show your brain that you're smarter. And let me circle back to the challenge, the personal flexibility challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I challenge listeners to pick something in their life that has become a nursery rhyme that's done the same every time. You know, don't do this on client reporting, but do this on in your personal life. And by doing something different, you are sending your brain a powerful message that you're in charge and you want things to be more adaptable, and that will make all the difference, because then you, it's like the athlete limbering up before the event, you know, that you become a better communicator, you become more adaptable. And as an adaptable human, back to the naked and afraid thing, as an adaptable human, you can be at the top of the food chain. And if you're not adaptable, then you're a passenger in other people's worlds.
Yeah.
And that's not a fun place to be.
Well, Carl, this has been great. A lot of great food for thought at a time when we certainly all need it. Thanks for being here. Thanks for the insights.
Oh, thanks for having
me. As always, this has been wonderful. Thank you for the time.
You bet. Thanks for having
me. Man, really, really great conversation there with Carl Ulrichs. He's an expert on all things, really, when it comes to business. You can learn more by visiting expertspeaks.com. Carl's also a thought leader with the Business Learning Institute, and you can take a look at some of the courses of his that are available through the BLI by visiting blionline.org and then clicking on course authors. And speaking of the Business Learning Institute, it is our sponsor this week. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that, gang, is all I've got. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.